You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build the social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Welcome to Social Selling Simplified. I'm your host, Ashley Shaw, and today I'm talking to Eric Huberman. Eric is the founder and CEO of Hawk Media, which is the fastest growing marketing consultancy in the US. And Eric and I were just breaking down some of his accolades and some of the things that he's done. And because he is a serial entrepreneur and marketing expert, and is highly sought after in terms of the world of digital marketing, entrepreneurship, and sales and business, I asked Eric, what are his favorite things about what he's accomplished in his career? And I wanted to open it up with Eric sharing a little bit about his journey and what he's most proud of. And what you guys are going to hear today is actually, it's going to be, I think, one of your favorite episodes, because we're going to be breaking down the things that actually work in marketing and the things that you may think work but don't. So thank you so much for being here today, Eric. So I would love to hear a little bit more about what you're most proud of in your career.
Yeah, I mean, the accolades are fun and all, but usually those are more driven. We go for those because it gets attention to the company. So they're way more pragmatic to helping us build the brand than it is like actually a feeling of a win. The wins are when I've had, you know, when I've grown something successfully. You know, I've sold to e-commerce companies that I started. One was out of my house or my apartment at the time, and then a tiny little office. And the second one was getting recruited by an investment fund to help them launch one. And it was, you know, just really rewarding. And then now I'd say the biggest kind of rewarding thing is what we've built today. Hawk Media is the, you know, reward. It is the fun part of this where we, you know, we employ over 150 people around the country. We've got offices in LA, New York, and Boston. We manage marketing for over 500 brands and have helped build many, many, many brands that a lot of the listeners probably use today from scratch through being, you know, large companies as marketers. And so that really the substance of it is what's actually rewarding. You realize the awards become kind of fleeting. Like it's like, oh, that's cool. Like moving on. Like I'd say the only one that still has impact on me was Forbes 30 under 30, because I put so much weight into getting that with the time cut off. I got it at 29 years old. And so knowing that I had reached that kind of level of success before I reached 30 was just important to me. And so I remember getting it was a big deal, because I also, the day it came out, I thought I didn't get it. And because I was far down the list and they forgot to notify me. And so I was just reading through the list at all my friends that got it and then came across my own name, not knowing that I was going to be on there. So there was a little impact there. I was actually talking about that last week with my business partner, but like almost none of the other ones mean anything. We get awards regularly. It's more just a great way to get our name out there.
Amazing. And what are your favorite, well, I'm not going to say favorite brands, but what are the ones that, like, let's say your top three that you're like most proud of that you've worked with?
There's a lot. I mean, and a lot of the brands that I'm proud of, like the brands I'm proud of working with are the ones that were literally nothing. And I also have to be careful who I disclose, because they're kind of shy about it.
Yeah,
one that we just put out that I'm really happy with is that's well known as Barstool Sports. We've been with them for 3.5 years. They had no e-commerce presence when we started, and now it's a massive, massive, massive business. And so they just let us put out a case study. So that's one. Tomorrow Melon is another one, shoe brand that what we started with very early and grew them to be a large shoe brand. I think what else we've been allowed to say, there's some very big brands too that are fun to work with. Like it's one of the largest running shoe companies based in the US. Being able to work with guys like that, Red Bull, who we're allowed to say, brands that frankly, they were established before we got there, but knowing that they chose us to work on that brand and that we did a good job and that we repeated work, et cetera. And knowing like that's, you know, playing in pro sports, so to speak, as a marketer, And that's very cool to see. Plus knowing that Work's able to take a tiny brand and blow it up to be something massive. That combination is really fun.
Mm. And so what drew you into marketing? Like, did you right out of school or in school, did you decide that's what you were going to do? Or
That's actually a layup question for me, because in school, I made fun of marketing majors. I used to say to my friends, like, what do? Draw pictures all day? Like, what happens in class? Not that I was anything to be proud of. I was a business management major, which I still don't know what that meant. But I school for me was more of a social scene. I grew up in a small town and went to a big school. And so I went to meet people and learn that side. Academics were always easy to me. And I grew up with an entrepreneurial dad. So business wasn't that hard to understand for me either. But no, I graduated and went into real estate exactly a week before the entire banking industry collapsed in the United States. So after that, about 6 months in, I ended up launching an online business because I had to pivot into, or actually no, it took a year. 6 months in, I started working on, but a year in, I launched an online business music company for one-on-one business coaching for musicians. And was able to pull in some of the most prominent music executives through a friend's dad that just started making introductions for me. Through that, I had to figure out how to recruit musicians onto the platform. And that's what started my kind of digital marketing practice. And, you know, then ended up, that was one company. Then I, after 2 years, hired a CEO to take that over because it wasn't going to be a massive business. And I was at that point 24 and wanted something that I could know could set me up. And then I could go do the passion project. And then I built and sold to those two other e-commerce companies. And that was, all of those took a lot of digital marketing and chops. And that's really how I got savvy at it.
And so what were the other digital marketing companies you worked with? So you've worked in music. That was the first one.
Music. Then I launched a company called Swag of the Month. That was in 2010, I think. End of 2010, early 11. Or no, it was, sorry, 2011. And we really early in subscription e-commerce, pre-Dollar Shave, pre-that whole craze. And so we were seen as innovative. And so we got a ton of press that drove a ton of business. And then we used that money that we got from the press because it was bootstrapped to then double down on spending on advertising and just started learning how to grow it that way. And I had to learn Google ads. There were no Facebook ads at that point. And then built that for a year and a half, give or take, and then sold it. So it was early 2011. And then in September 2012, I joined an incubator. I got offered actually to run e-commerce for Warner Music, the music and e-commerce background. I got offered to run business development for Live Nation. And then I got offered to join this little incubator called Science that I thought was really engaging. There were two reasons I joined that company. One, the other two companies were in Burbank and Hollywood. And if you know LA, I lived in Santa Monica. I still do. And I did not want to do that commute. And it, as a 20, at that point, I was 25. And I was like, that was a factor. I was like, I don't want to drive all the way out there. And number two, I really like the startup scene. And so this incubator in Santa Monica was recruiting. They really wanted me because I was one of the only people that had sold an e-commerce company that they knew, or subscription e-commerce, joined them. They had just launched this company called Dollar Shave Club. So I joined that incubator, started advising for their portfolio. And at that point, I had to be so scrappy with marketing from my company. When I got to a place with real resources, I just was able to open the floodgates because I had been so particular about the things I spent money on and how I did it, that now I had real ammo. I went to town and so was able to help them build a large activewear brand called Ellie that's still around, E-L-L-I-E.
So I love that you said that you started off scrappy, because I think that that's where a lot of my listeners are at. They're starting off usually in the, you know, the health and fitness online coaching world, or they might be other social sellers that have a product, but they need to be scrappy. They're watching the budget. They're really looking at those places that they spend money, because right now it's an expensive hobby for them. So if you were to start over and thinking back to the scrappy days, what would be, you know, three things that you would advise doing right away that would help get you some lift in your business?
Yeah. Number one, do not listen to like any self-help gurus out there, because they make money selling their help, not doing what they actually are saying they can teach. So I just see a lot of these people fall into the Tai Lopez tutorials of the world, and just be really careful of that. Thankfully, I didn't. I just started like logically going, well, that won't make sense. Like, it is really not that hard with marketing. Like, you know, Facebook, I'm going to use Facebook advertising example. They think it's this like black box, but it's really simple. Facebook allows you to say, you know, this is who my customer is. These are all the things they have in common. If you upload an email, they're going to match it to all your email database. They're going to match it to those people on Facebook, then look at all their interest base and what their behaviors are, and then find people like them that have a similar buying propensity. And then you just need to figure out what the best copy and creative is that's going to attract the most people. And that's it. That's how Facebook works. It's pretty simple. And the reason that advertisement works is because when someone's on Facebook, they're just scrolling through their newsfeed. Like 99.9% of people are not doing anything productive when they're sitting on Facebook. Mm-hmm. They're just bored scrolling. And so you can actually, show them a piece of creative, give them some copy during a time, knowing that that's a person that has a propensity to buy your product during a time when they're bored. That's why it works. So like, there's no like black box mystery about this. It's pretty simple. Google, on the other hand, is someone is actively looking for something. And if you think you presenting in front of them during searching for specific things that you have the solution for, you can get that customer. And then it's just a function of, can you build a business model that can afford to acquire that customer at the cost it's going to be and still make money? That's the game. And so it's not that complicated. So thinking through marketing in that way and starting to just do it yourself a little bit. But that being said, I wouldn't start with Facebook marketing. That's not where I would start. I wouldn't start by spending money, depending on what you're doing. And you were saying a lot of your audience are individual kind of, trainers and things like that, that are trying to get their name out there. And to me, the biggest thing is to try to get organic reach through a scrappy way. When you don't have a lot of money, you have time. Use that time to figure out like how to get press on yourself, how to get other people to talk to you, how to drive word of mouth. I really like, if I'm a young company, try to make friends with influencers, try to get other people to spread the word. Influencers and press are two great ways to get free audience. If you find ways to do it, whether it's I'll do a free training for you or whatever it is, just being scrappy, it's going to take time. You have to grind it out. You have to get a lot of no's, but that's how we built Swag of the Month. Again, was bootstrap. What drove us to enough revenue to actually spend on marketing was we just got a ton of free press because I hustled, found every editor I could, talked to everyone I could about it, and realized a trick that it's a little harder now because everybody spams press. But back then, again, digital, Facebook still didn't have ads. Like it was still pretty early. And I just emailed everyone with the headline I thought they would go with. And they didn't usually take my headline, but at least caught their attention. So I was like, TechCrunch would at the time write about any company that raised money. It was just all that mattered. And so I frankly made up the fact that we raised $100,000, told them that, and within 15 minutes got a call from their editor and they published it within 30. And that was the first day we launched, drove 600 customers to our site at $17 a pop. We're off to the races. We had a business. So that was just TechCrunch. Then we had Thrillist and Maxim and Huffington Post and Wall Street Journal and Elle Magazine and all sorts of stuff that I was able to do. And that was all free. It just took time to find the person, to reach out to them. And I don't know how many people I reached out to that didn't even respond, but just kept going with it. So don't replicate the exact strategy because that's been done 100 times, a billion times now. Mm-hmm. But think about it that way, where it's like what I was able to do is get the attention of people that have way bigger audiences that I want to reach and found ways to have them reach their audience for me. And there's ways to be scrappy about that, whether it's affiliate and saying, hey, I'll give you a cut of every sale. None of these are going to work at scale, but to get off the ground, they can work.
Got it. Okay. So we're talking things like, if we look at like what the current climate is, it could be podcasts or getting on people's blogs, like anything where your niche and your people might be hanging out.
Yep. No. And I still, by the way, I have a $75 million company with all these employees. I'm still on one or two podcasts a day. I'm still doing the exact same things in that sense, just to keep that moving along with a lot of, now I'm also deploying resources and we're spending, a ton of money on marketing as an agency, but you step into it. The way we look at marketing is like you start with what you can do and then you slowly add things to that. You usually don't drop things. It's not like I replace, like I'm going to stop doing this because now I'm doing this. I just continue to add more and more muscle to our marketing experience. And the big thing also is with advertising, like it takes a lot of money to test your audience, to figure out what's working, to then start to get a positive ROI and have enough statistical significance to make those decisions. So if you're not able to spend $5,000 to $10,000 a month on advertising and do it for months before you really see efficacy, just stay away from it for now. Unless it's some one-off like strategic thing with a local publication, but I'm talking Facebook ads, Google ads. I'm not really of the, like, don't get me wrong, some people can find ways to spend $500 and make an ROI on it, but there's nothing scalable about it. So you can end up throwing that money at it for, 30 days, 40 days, make some money, but then you go to scale it and you haven't built a good practice at all. And that's what we see a lot of these more like growth hackers do. There's right. nothing scalable about it. They never get past their own, you know, what's right in front of them. And mm-hmm. so it depends, and we talked about this before starting, mm-hmm. if you want to build a real big business, you have to build something scalable. If your goal is just to be a single operator and, you know, make a living, then yeah, sure, there's some scrappy stuff you could do, but that's not really what I speak to or where my mindset is. Like, I always knew I wanted to build a global, massive business. That is what drives me. And mm-hmm. so I've always looked at everything as, what does this look like when we're 10 times the size, 100 times the size, et cetera.
Mm. And then, so what does your schedule look like now then in terms of how you get out there and how, like, I know you mentioned you're on podcasts every day. Like, what other things are you doing to make sure you're out there?
Meaning because of COVID or just in general?
No. I just mean like marketing wise.
Oh yeah. So yeah. for us, I mean, I'm going to go pre-COVID. I was speaking at a conference average once a week somewhere okay. in the world.
Yeah.
I'm on a bunch of podcasts, webinars. My team's doing at least a webinar a month. We're hosting one, plus working, doing some with different partners. That's another really powerful tool, partners, people mm-hmm. reaching the same audience that are not competitive to you. For us, mm-hmm. it's a lot of different like marketing software companies. We do tons of collaborative events, hosting dinners with them, hosting events. We host a happy hour at our office once a month. We also host a probably second event once a month, whether it's piggybacking a big conference or something. We do usually host two events a month. We do an annual conference called Hawkfest that brings out about 600 brand owners to every event. This year, we actually partnered with the city of LA to launch E-Commerce Week LA, and we're doing a full week of events. Because of what's going on, we made it virtual for this year, but getting all the big e-commerce brands in LA, like Dollar Shave Club and MeUndies and FabFitFun and Honest Company, et cetera, to host their own events throughout that. And then we have a pretty large advertising spend, a lot of Google and Facebook, a little bit of LinkedIn to drive leads. We have a social media team that's constantly engaging groups as well as managing our social to just keep the kind of the community management side of what we do and building a community around the brand. We have a content team that's constantly writing. We basically put out a blog post a day on different topics. We're putting out a weekly report on statistics around the coronavirus and consumer spending so that people can actually get information from us. We have a PR team that's getting us at least a press hit a day, some piece of press every day. A lot of thought leadership, as well as a lot of just articles about the things we're doing. We have a full CRM team. So we're constantly, we send out emails every week, as well as, you know, nurturing systems, et cetera, for when people come into our funnel and want to know more about Hawk Media. We build a lot of automation around it. We have a whole prospecting team, just emailing people to talk to them about their marketing, basically. And obviously a sales team to close those deals. The partnership team, partnerships drive 30 to 40% of our revenue. It's massive for us. So all, you know, just working with other companies, reaching their audience and ours and collaborating is big. I'm trying to think what else I'm missing. I think that's a lot of it. And then we're also thinking of big initiatives that differentiate us. Because at this point, we are one of the biggest independent agencies out there. But if we want to show like, no, we're still scrappier and more innovative than anyone else. So 3 weeks into quarantine, we threw quarantine conference, which we had like Damon John and Anthony Scaramucci and all these big speakers come in and talk about what they saw coming the next few months, which thankfully turned out they were right. We had 4,200 CEOs tune in for that, which again, CEOs are really our main target. So that was a good one. Working on a book that we're going to put out that's basically our marketing methodology to share with the world and like all sorts of things that, you know, help kind of elevate us above just another digital agency. And that's been something really important to me from the beginning. We also have a venture fund that we invest straight into marketing software that we use. Again, basically differentiating us and allowing us to actually own a piece of the ecosystem as opposed to just being another player in it. So really always looking for like, again, if my mindset was, you know, we run this business now, I like being 150 people, none of this would really matter. I wouldn't be working on this, but I'm looking at this going, this is just a start. I want to be 100 times the size. That's what drives all these other decisions.
And so how much of your time or like the company's time, if you were to look at like a percentage, is focused on driving new business and all of these things that you've talked about?
I mean, it's a 10-person team out of 150, so not that much in terms of in context. We drive a ton of new business, but it's a small team. It takes a lot more to service that and keep it. And that's way more important, obviously. So,
right. Awesome.
Like, word of mouth is still the biggest driver of almost any business. So you got to actually deliver. Like that has been what's successful to us is like, we're really easy to work with. We have no barrier to entry and we're really good at what we do. So the combination has allowed us to get a ton of new business easily and keep it. So we've been able to grow like we have.
Right. Okay. Awesome. And so in terms of the content team, and I'm really curious about the Facebook groups and what you guys do there. What is the strategy you guys use around providing content for your audience? Because I know you've mentioned like organic reach a few times.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do around content strategy? And then I want to talk about Facebook groups.
Well, it depends on your business. Like, you have to be careful if your business is actually that content and giving it away for free, you got to be careful with. Mm-hmm. But for us, our business is doing the work for people. So we're fine to tell them how to do it and be like, here's how you do Facebook ads. Good luck. And, yeah. You know, so for us, we put out constant content. People are, you know, basically it's problem solution content. Like, people are looking for, how do I do this? How do I do that? What do I do here? What happened here? What does this news mean for me? And we're trying to be the thought leader saying, hey, this is what we're seeing. And just, we put out, we're pretty open with the information we come across because we know people hire us for two things, expertise and bandwidth. That proves our expertise and also proves they don't have the bandwidth.
Mm. Okay. Love that. And then what about Facebook groups? So how do you guys use those to spread your reach?
Yeah. So there's just a lot of groups out there that are for, you know, marketers or for CEOs trying to get help. I'm a member of a lot of organizations that for CEOs. So there's like Young Entrepreneurial Council, YEC, there's YPO, which is kind of the upper echelon of business networks. There, you have to do 13 million in revenue to join, plus have over 50 employees, and the average person and it has just over 70 million in revenue as a CEO. So there's those kind of groups that allow me to, you know, meet tons and tons of people, which either leads to them wanting to work with me or knowing someone, et cetera. So from a networking perspective, those groups are awesome. And then there's also just tons of Facebook groups out there for like brand owners or, you know, scrappy marketers or whatever it is. And so we join a lot of them and we'll throw things out there and just put our name out there in a lot of those, you know, communities.
And so would that be the same sort of strategy of providing content that's sort of like problem and solution, or is it more so just going in and answering people's questions?
More the latter.
More of that.
Yeah. More just being just directly interactive, not preaching.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
And then we also, like you mentioned, what else are we doing? Like, because of right now we used to throw these happy hours. Now we're doing bi-weekly, like, Thursday night events that are just fun. So we have like this Thursday, we're doing a comedy motivational speaker. The guy's awesome. He's super fun. And so then I'll take that and we're doing it for free and I'll just go spread it around those groups and say, hey, if you guys want to join us. And now we're just on their radar. It's again, build community is one of our core values. Like, I truly believe that creates sustainability in a business. And so just getting people that just love our brand just around us that are in the community helps a lot.
Awesome. And so I know we earlier sort of started our conversation around hashtags and strategy, because I get this all the time from people asking about what are the best hashtags to use. So let's just talk a little bit about that. What are your thoughts around, like, I guess focusing in on that stuff? Like, I hear a ton of talk of the algorithm, all that sort of stuff.
Basically, it is against the best interest of Facebook or any of these social platforms to let you have organic reach. It doesn't help them because then you're not paying for the reach. Mm-hmm. And so know that they're just diminishing it more and more and more. And the idea of going viral pretty much doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the only platform that you can still go viral on is TikTok, which is interesting. It's worth looking at because there are a lot of ways to do it there, but you have to do really good content. The rest of them, it just doesn't really happen anymore. The only way people gain followers is either kind of the fake ways of like follow back, which does nothing. That's just, it's basically an echo chamber of people that just follow each other and they're never going to buy your product. And if you want the vanity metric of showing a bunch of followers for some other reason, sure, but it's not going to do anything for your business. And don't let yourself fall into the vanity. I see people look at their own vanity metrics and get so stuck on them. And it's like, it doesn't matter. And it really is that simple. So with hashtags, they don't really do much anymore. You might as well, like, you might get a few followers here and there, but like, it's not that big of a deal. And again, spending your time focusing on how to optimize what might get you one or two social media followers, not customers, is the wrong use of your time. Mm. So, you know, posting, staying consistent, staying in front of your audience, sure, but also know that on average, a person reaches about 0.1% of their audience on social media is where they've limited it to now. So if you happen to get something that you post that's a little better than that, you might get up to 1-2%, but you're not going to reach most of your audience ever. And so knowing that, it's very rare that a company these days can really succeed off just organic social. It doesn't do a lot anymore.
Yeah, I remember looking at the stats, and this has been, I guess, over the past couple of years, where it used to be like 2 to 6%. So that's even more, you know, like it's obvious. So
it's been that way for a while. We had an experience with, I'll just say, a very big green character, cartoon character, was launching a game. Mm-hmm. And they were so excited about, I think they had 40 million, yeah, 40 million Facebook fans. And I was like, okay. And they're like, yeah, so we're good. We're going to launch and we're just going to push it out to our fans. I'm like, let me show you something. Log into your Facebook page, because you can't do this unless you're the owner of the page. They log in and I'm like, now go look at your last three posts. And I'm like, see how many views you have on each of those posts? And it was literally, I was like, it's going to be about 0.1%. And it was, they have 40 million. It was literally 41,000, 40,000, 39,000. And it was like, so you understand that like you're about to reach 40,000 people. Now, whatever that conversion rate is on that is going to be, let's say you're going to get 2% of those people to click through and then 2% of those to actually buy anything. Like, you're screwed. Like, this is not a strategy. And yeah. So that, I'll repeat that actually real quick. So you get about a 2% click-through rate on Facebook. So if you're reaching 0.1%, that's 40,000. Then 2% of that is what, 800? Is that right? Yeah. So 800 people will go to your site. And then site conversion rate, I'm just using a round average, is about 2%. So 16 people out of 40 million people are going to go buy your product. Congratulations. And so that's literally what I like showed them. And that's what ended up happening, because they actually didn't listen. And that game no longer exists. So it's just organic social is just not really, like, it's byproduct at this point to us. We don't really do stuff to drive it. Posting consistently and keeping engaged for the people that want to see that is important. Like, even Hawk Media posts a ton on social, but it's not like that's where it stops. Like, that and engaging other people on social and making it more of a communication tool is great, but doing it and thinking that's going to be some top of the funnel solution to drive your business, no.
Yeah. So that's where you would add in, like, obviously funnels, emails, like all that other stuff that builds into the strategy.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's super important. That's actually a good point. When you're doing, even with the press stuff I was talking about, you should always start by building out your net, so to speak. So a great website, an email capture system, and even phone number. So you can do SMS and email marketing. Those are all the things you have to do to really compete. Mm-hmm. So like building a full way of continuing to nurture people that come in and are interested, but don't buy right away, because most people don't. There's something called a consideration period or purchase cycle that a lot of people miss. From when they're introduced to your brand to when they actually buy, there's always a time period. During that, you need to be following up with them with retargeting, email marketing, SMS, and build content and building ways that they will re-engage to the point that they go, okay, I trust you and I'm going to buy it.
Right. Yeah. Love that. My last question for you is around, what do you think has led to you seeing so much success so quickly in obviously like all of your business ventures? Like, if you were to really just boil it down to like what you think you've done a really good job of, or that is your skill set, what do you think that would be?
Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about Malcolm Gladwell, because a lot of times the guy speaks in absolutes that are not absolute, and that just kind of bugs me. But there's a statement that he makes in Outliers that I think kind of a point that he makes that I think is really right. And to be successful, you just have to be smart enough and hardworking enough. And so that means, like, I'd say 95% of people just don't know how to get shit done. And it's a big statement and I get it, but I think people have a really hard time just moving things forward. They plan too much. They think too much. They, you know, they question too much. They don't just do it. And I'm fortunate enough, like, I am one of the privileged youth that has a successful entrepreneur dad that pushed me to be an entrepreneur. I took it for granted and always thought that I was going to be a business owner. And I also have kind of a chip on my shoulder of a why not me kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And it's almost entitlement, where it's a sense of like, I've met and worked with so many billionaires at this point, and very few of them have impressed me in terms of their hard work ethic or aptitude. Like, they're smart people. You have to be smart enough to get there. And they're hardworking people. But they're no different than a lot of other people I work with. And really what drives the level of success for someone is timing. Like hitting the timing right, which you can't predict. That's part of the thing with timing, which can also be known as luck. But the whole idea of making your own luck, that's the being smart enough and hardworking enough. And so really what I think, you know, timing is a reason why my business is as big as it is today. I timed it where I had built and sold two e-commerce companies and started advising other companies right as the masses of the US realized e-commerce is here to stay and going to be a big thing, because we were just getting out of, you know, at that point, we were 10 years after the tech bubble burst, and, you know, thing like they saw the, you know, these big companies like Dollar Shave Club skyrocketing. And so Red Bull and Verizon, all these companies went, we need to figure this out. And now, and even now, I actually think this whole coronavirus thing is another tipping point for our business, because e-commerce was still only 18% or sorry, 13% of consumer spending in the US. It went to 30 in the past 2 months. And so that's, to me, now all the companies that have still resisted it, which are most, because for a reason, when 90% of your business is coming from brick and mortar, why the hell are you going to put more into e-commerce? But now there was such a pivot. We're, and that's what I mean by timing. I would have never predicted that, but now we're set up to be one of the best companies to service that. So that's the timing piece. But from the beginning, from even when I was 6 years old, I was trying to start little businesses and figure it out. And I just got used to like, I don't care if it goes well or not. I'm just going to go do it. We'll see what happens. And then through that, I learned a lot. So again, smart enough that I had the knowledge and had the aptitude to figure these things out. And then hardworking enough, like I've never been scared of working hard. So like, you know, almost 7 years into business when this all hit, I worked day and night for a month to make sure that our business was solid through the coronavirus and fix some of the problems so that we could move through it. So finally, literally tomorrow is my first vacation since this all hit. So.
Something else that stands out to me about you is, have you ever heard of the book Dollars Flow Easily to Me?
No.
It was something that I'm in a mastermind right now with Rick Mulready. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's a Facebook ads guy, but this was like the first book he gave us when we first started the mastermind. And it talks about the idea that if you think something is easy, it will be. And if you think something is hard, it will be. And what's interesting is like, you know, you were talking about your dad being an entrepreneur and being set up with that mindset right from the beginning. And it's something that I often, the last couple of episodes on the podcast, we've talked about it. I was the same. I came from a dad that was like, put me in the desert, strip me of everything. I will make every cent back. Like money, making money is not hard. And it is interesting how much that can, if you don't have that mental barrier to get past, how much you can accomplish with that.
Yeah. And I also think that doing this for a dozen years and actually more, I started my first business 13 years ago. And you just start to learn that like part of running a business, and this is important for everyone probably listening too, is you're going to be dealing with problems all the time.
Yeah. I always like to think about it like it's problems that as an entrepreneur you've asked for. Because there's always problems in anything 100%. That you're going to, you know, like working for other people, working for corporate, like there's always problems. At least the benefit of being an entrepreneur is you've asked for them. There's some gratitude, I guess, that comes with that too.
100%. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think we always say it all the time that, you know, we signed up for this. Like this isn't, no one's forcing you to be an entrepreneur. So if you don't want to deal with it, and I actually think this happens a lot. I think people get in their mind that they have to be an entrepreneur, even though they don't really in their heart want to be. And I think people have to also be okay with not, you know, it's not, there's no shame in not wanting to be an entrepreneur. I think it's only 1% of our country are. So.
Love it. And so Eric, where is the best place for people to find you, follow you and learn more about you?
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. It's just @ Eric Huberman, ERIKHUBERMAN.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
No, this was fun. Thank you.
The opportunity to grow your Beachbody business is tremendous right now, while more people than ever are switching to at-home workouts. And here's the thing, it's easy to swear off any hey girl inviting because you're afraid of what to say, turning people off, people saying no, and shaming you for asking. And that's why I created the Done For You Marketing Funnel membership. It only opens for enrollment 2 times per year, and July, we're coming for you. It takes hey girl inviting off the table while giving you a strategy to help more people than ever before without the commission breath. This Done For You marketing funnel will help you authentically attract people that you can start helping without having to think about what to say or how to say it. You'll get all the tools you need to plug and play and start attracting people organically through a sales funnel. Social media posts, freebies, emails, and Facebook group posts are all done for you and curated for the times we're experiencing. Do you really want to keep standing by and hoping people will come to you? Or are you ready to grow your Beachbody business the fastest and easiest way? Like I said, this membership only opens 2 times per year and the doors close tight on August 3rd. Jump in and check it out. Go to ashleyshaw.ca/masterclassbonuses. That's ashleyshaw.ca/masterclassbonuses, and you'll get $600 worth of extra bonuses and workshops by joining today. We'll see you on the inside of the Done For You Marketing Funnel.